Okay. Can we get all right, can we get started, or?
Yep.
Okay. I'm going to call to order the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee meeting. Today's Wednesday, February 17th. We're at VMRC, and it's not 8:05. It's 3 minutes past four. Jim?
Want to go through the replenishment plan again, just like we normally do at this time of year. We have, you see on that front page of the handout you have, we got the $2 million from the general fund and a little bit of fund from other places. And, I mean, we're obviously we finished up last year, the season that ran from 2014 through the July 2014 through spring 2015 at higher again than we'd been, about 650,000 bushels, about 300,000 of which were public. This year the harvest does look down, but it's a long time before we'll see those numbers. They're just starting to get in from the fall. If you kind of follow along on the second page, just talking about a little bit of seed first that we have plans for. Again, moving about 10,000 bushels of seed up into the Potomac Tribs. You know, we've been doing this now for 5 or 6 years. About 10,000 bushels a year, and this slide shows the results that we see. I mean, I don't know if it's because warming up there don't report, or if it's because we're doing that poorly. But we're spending an average of $82,000, and we're the market landings are only $66,000. So we're not getting one for one in dollars back up there. I don't know, Wayne. I mean, from looking at the boats, to me, there should be more harvest than that.
Just can't find the oyster.
Huh?
Can't find the seed.
I don't believe it. Just the number of days I see the people up there and the number of people on the rocks. But, you know.
Right. I mean, when it first started, there were a few boats there. You know, they stayed until it was time. You know, they could do better hand scraping somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that's just about what they do. It's a few that stay around and tong a little bit to 4 or 5 bushels a day. But I tried every rock in the that's been planted in the Okamaka. I can barely find any seed. I mean, just every grab, you might see one little cluster of 4 or 5, and that's it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they're not, like we talked about one time before, maybe they're planting them like they're going to take them up with a dredge instead of like they're taking them with tongs.
Well, they're pretty small areas, and I don't know if it's raised, but, I mean, I think we're getting some underreporting, too. But, I mean, that's why I'm still not, you know, still staying at 10,000 bushels in the two areas. I mean, our survey shows we got oysters, pretty good counts at Nomni, so want to get more in the Cone and more in the Yocomico this year. So.
Wayne, are you not finding small ones that haven't grown, or are you just not finding oysters, period?
No, I'm finding oysters. The oysters, I didn't tong there but a couple of weeks this year, and that was at the end of the season. And I could go out in 3 or 4 hours and catch probably about 4 bushels. But they were all big oysters. I mean, 4 to 5-inch oysters that have probably been there for, I don't know, what would you say, Jim? 4 or 5 years, maybe?
Yeah.
Are you throwing stuff back? It still needs to grow.
We're not catching much stuff for it.
Okay.
You know that it's supposed to have been planted, but
right.
But we're just finding very few scattered plants. You know, and like I said, it looks like they were planted to be dredged up instead of tonged up. I know if you're going to plant an area to tong, you want to plant them a little bit thicker.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could make one suggestion, if we're going to plant this year in Yocomico, instead of spreading it around, just plant one bar.
Yeah.
And try it, you know, for tong and try it like that.
Then you worry a little bit about the rays, but, I mean, you know, we don't know what the rays are doing there either.
I didn't see it. You know, I didn't see any ray damage. I went to the Machodic and took some horses up for a private planter there about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I saw a lot of ray damage there.
Yeah.
But I didn't see any on the Tongan Bottom in the Yocomico.
Chances being poached.
How much acreage was that 10,000 bushels planted on?
We probably did about 5,000 bushels on 4 acres in the cone, and about the same in Nomina. In Nomina, we probably put it on 2 areas that were 4 acres, the 5,000 bushels. So.
What about the Yocomico? Are you planted three areas?
We're shooting to do about 1,000 bushels per acre.
Okay.
And that's what we when we planted. So maybe we need to do heavier to try to get catch. And,
I mean,
but if you see people, just mention that they should be reporting, you know, to make this worthwhile. So
I know everybody that I see horsing, you know, or at every meeting I go to, you know, that's one thing I stress. I mean, if you can pay $300, you know what, you don't have, that's all you have to do is report.
Yeah.
Well, that's like one bushel of oysters for 43 square feet. That's one bushel of oysters for 43 square feet. You just told me 10 acres. There's 43,560 square feet in an acre. That's every 43 square feet. That's one bushel of oysters. So that's like 4 foot times 10.
You bought yours tighter than that?
Yes, I do. I mean, I thicker than that for dredging.
I can say when I was tonguing, like I said, I didn't tong but the last couple of weeks of the season. And I could push across the whole bar, which, you know, would probably 600 feet.
Well, you're absolutely right. There's no question about it. They're too thin.
In that 600 foot, I wouldn't throw back a bushel of little oysters.
Yeah, that's absolutely that piece of ground too thin. My fishermen don't even want to work on something like that. I mean, that's there it is. Every 43 square feet, you got one bushel.
Yeah.
That's what your recommendation is.
Well, that's what we've been doing. Yeah.
You think that's appropriate?
No, we can try. We can try to make them smaller.
What do you think would be appropriate?
Well, I mean, you're always balancing. You know, if you make it too bad for the rays versus, we can try doing it twice as thick as that.
That would be one bushel every 25 foot. That would be like a 4 foot, 5. That would be like this table right here having a bushel.
Five.
That would be nice. That,
5 by 5.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Do you think if you plant them thick, and I've heard different theories, if you plant them thick, then the rays can't get to the ones on the bottom. And then I've heard if you plant them thin, you know, then maybe they don't get to all of them. What's your opinion on that?
Well, they'll chew them up like grommet. I've had when the rays come over, they'll chew them into powder. All of them.
If they get there and get to work on them, they're going to go through.
I don't know. Y'all don't.
I've seen them. I've seen where they come.
We haven't seen much ray damage up there in the cone in the Yocomico, really. But we don't think. There's been some areas here and there, but not widespread.
Yeah. The second part of it is to keep doing what we've been doing of actually allowing private people to take the seed out of the yank tank. This shows the just the stock assessment for the areas that we take seed versus areas we don't take seed. There's not much difference in them, so obviously we don't seem to be hurting these areas. And so we, you know, we'll be advertising for 20,000 bushels in the yank tank, but counts are not high enough in the Great Comico this year to do it there, so just be
Jim, did you skip over the Rappahannock in the middle there?
Yep, I did.
All right.
Just because I went to the... we have one little area in the Rappahannock that... we got a very good set this year in the Rappahannock, and one area was so good, that ferry bar, which is a little bar right next to the bridge, that, you know, we were running 600 spat per meter. So we want to go ahead and take, you know, a couple thousand bushels of those and move them up to Waterview, just because they're so thick right there that they won't, they probably won't grow out to be market oysters in that rotation area. So it's not a big bar. It's only 2-4 acres, so it's take a couple thousand bushels off of it, and there should be plenty left there for the when the season starts.
And it's a harvest bar, ferry bar?
It's a harvest bar, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's right down in front of that restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I mean, for some reason, that one got more set than anywhere. So we might as well take advantage of it and move it.
So. It's because it was worked.
No, I haven't been working a long time. I mean, because we put brand new shells there.
Yeah, we worked it good last.
Yeah, for last.
Last
yeah.
time was over.
We put brand new shells there. It had a lot of new shells on it. So.
Yeah. About a week or 10 days there. Done pretty good there.
Then the rest of it is switching over to the shell planting. And we got, again, we picked the areas. We have in that handout the table where the amount of shell per meter. And these four areas that we're going to concentrate on this year, the York, which is down right now. The counts are down in New York compared to other places. In the Rappahannock, we have some areas that the shell has gotten down. We're going to, you know, reshell the areas that were harvested this year, as well as some areas that have gotten down. And then some shell in Pocomoke. This is an area that we didn't get any set this past year. The only area in the state that we didn't get any set was Pocomoke Sound, and we got three relatively big bars up there to add some shell to. And then some bars in Tangier. Tangier was a little bit better set than in Pocomoke, but still wasn't a great set. And Johnson worked really hard, so he's got to reshell that this year.
What number do you look for before you plant shells back?
Five.
When it gets below five? That's
yeah, but it's a couple of areas a little bit more than that because we did the survey before the season, and we know it's down to five now, so a little bit higher than that. And it's best to go in and do the shelling, like in Temple Bay, after we just had the season, rather wait until next year, because then we got a chance that we'll get those numbers back up in time. It comes around in 3 years. So.
Your cults per meter square, that's bushels per meter square? Or what is that unit?
Liters.
Oh, liters, okay.
Yeah, very
liters
small
of cults per, okay.
Yeah. It's about... Yeah. And if it gets down to half of a gray bucket per meter,
right,
then we reshell, which is a very small amount. We also are going to do about 4 acres on Seaside. And then we have... two areas in Pocomoke Sound that we've invested quite a bit of shell the past 2 years on marshals and birds, and both years we absolutely got no set there. And around the edges of them, we got some good brown shell in it, but some of the edges are not good. And we actually want to hire some of the boats to go in and pick up some of those shells around the edges since we've got no set and move them more toward the center of the rock where it's a little bit firmer. Try to salvage those shells before they're totally gone. Had we gotten a set, you know, when they were planted, they would have been fine, but they didn't, and now they're, you know, a half an inch into the sediment. So try to re-catch those. We are for our fossil shells. This is a map of where we've been working for the since 2000. This is, you know, Hog Island. This is up Tribal Shoals, and we have these four little rocks that this one is entirely gone, and this one is entirely gone now. And we have two little ones there that are left. Each of them about 4 acres that we can harvest shell from the fossil shell. We've been using about 5 acres a year for our projects if the shell density is good. So we're obviously going to run out there. And back in in the 60s, VMRC paid for a shell survey by a company called Southern Industries, and they found shell deposits in various places in the state, but one that they found that was pretty thick and pretty well located is right out here in front of our building. This is where we are, the shipyard over here, and our building's right behind us up there where the cursor is. That's a small boat harbor. This is what the shell vein looks like in it that was found. And so we have turned in permits to start dredging in this area and have this for our shell dredge area. There's about 650 acres there that are in that polygon, that red polygon. It's probably 400 acres of shell in it. So if it turns out that it's as good as they think it is when they did the survey, that's a lot of shell for a lot of years. So
what's the classification of that area now as far as bottom type or
it's
public ground or
it's public ground? It's all public. It's all public. That pink is public. It goes on down in the private here, but we'd be working up into the public. The red polygon, the pink is the as an example, this is Cruiser's Rock up here, which we're away from that, and this is Nansen Ridge over here, where at some point we had a lot of harvest over here. But these shells are, they're 3 feet under the ground.
Three feet under the bottom?
Uh-huh.
So there's no oysters on it at all?
Okay. If you go down 3 feet, then...
So what are they dredging when they dredge the channel over there? They just pump the spoil on top of the rock?
These are old fossil rocks.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, that's a piece of equipment that we use up at Tri-Bell. I mean, it's a cutter head right down that drops right down in front of it, and it sorts, it takes the shell up in the superstructure here, and washes all the shell, puts the big shell over on one side, put the vines on the other, and you know that's what we take off and plant. It can dig down to 40 feet. Some of the areas where we are at Tri-Bell, they actually go all the way to 40 feet and they can't go any deeper, and the shells are there. But most of the time we don't. It stops somewhere in the middle. But they can tell when shells stop coming up from the dredge onto the conveyor, then you know, they move, and the thing kind of pivots and moves real slow and goes back to back. So when they're done at the end of a cycle, you know, if we work there for a month, they do about 5 acres, and they will have, they put all the spoil back in the hole. So it's about 50% stuff that we can't use, either mud or real, real, real fine. Leaves a hole there. That's maybe
you say real fine real fine shells. Is that what you're saying?
No, finer than chicken grit.
So you don't do anything with that at all.
We actually, this over here, we allow them. I mean, there've been some restoration projects that have used them. We don't like using them, but the cores use some, but we let them actually sell them for pharmaceutical. They're sold for calcium,
okay.
And we get credit back for more shells. For those shells. So.
How fine are they? Like the size of a nickel or a quarter or 50 cent piece?
No, less. I mean, like half inch.
Half inch?
Yeah. They are nickel size and smaller.
But then how is VMRC paid back for that?
We get shell.
Credit from Langenfelter to, okay. Yeah.
For amount of cubic yards they take. We get a credit back for cubic yards.
So if you took that big pile that's sitting over there and you put it in one place, you don't think you'd get anything out of that for oyster strike or anything?
Not for what we have to pay to get the shells planted. It would be, so we're trying to get the maximum amount of money you can.
So in other words, that you
it goes in the bottom so fast. I mean, it's still so fast.
If it was planted where the bottom where there was already shell and stuff like that, I mean, God,
I mean, it looks like it's got value to me.
Tommy, you had a question?
The point is when you take that, what do you get from it specifically? Like 1,000 bushels of that, what would you get for that 1,000 bushels?
1,000 bushels of shell.
Well, we don't get 1,000 bushels. We get a lower price for that because it's only sold as a product that.
So what would you get for a bushel?
If you planted it.
No, either credit.
Sell it to pharmaceuticals.
How are you remunerated for that shell that's in that pile?
We probably get about maybe 40 cents a bushel for it.
Tom?
I'm paying $2 a bushel for stuff like that, no problem.
You don't want this. I mean, if you want to build a bed at the base, it would be all right. But if you're trying to maintain a bed, you wouldn't want it. I mean, we've tried it long enough.
What I like about fine stuff like that is you get spats onto it. You don't have like 5 spats on one shell like that where they grow up in a cluster and they're all hard to get on this small stuff like that. Because Wishy used to plant surf clam shells that would break up in small pieces like that, and he did extremely well with it. It didn't last as long, and you don't see any surf clams. But that's cheap, 40 cents a bushel?
Not anymore. Mm-hmm. No, 40 cents a bushel, if we were to take them out and plant it, it'd be $4 a bushel.
So what does 40 cent mean?
That's how much credit they give us back that we can put into big shells.
How soon do you anticipate having to switch to this new area? When would you see?
Switch this year because it'll be so much cheaper. It'll save us that long chug from way up there down to where we start planting. So I'm hoping we get like 50 cents cheaper shells for saving on that, because it's closer for them for getting fuel and everything else. So it's that tri-belt is a long way coming down that river. Yeah. It's half a day or more.
It's what, like 15 miles, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 15 miles at least, but not more.
Now though, you're moving to a productive oyster area, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're moving to a productive oyster area now, right?
Right. These?
Right. This area
that
you're talking about now.
No. I mean, it's not productive in this spot.
But around it?
Over at Nasman Ridge, here. And we haven't caught anything in Nasman Ridge for a while, but several years we caught something. And Cruisers has some. But again, I mean, we've done.
But there's no chance for sedimentation of private.
I mean, if you look at this one right here, and these here, and these here,
uh-huh.
They are surrounded by private leases.
Okay.
And
no problem.
We have to work around them. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we did a study on the dredge plume. This piece of machinery has been designed for this. It has what's called an elephant trunk discharge. And you think of an elephant's trunk. So it goes down underneath the barge in the hole and puts the stuff right back in the hole.
That's it.
So it doesn't have a big sediment flow.
If they dig 40 feet, how big are the holes left?
Half the stuff goes back in it. But if they dig 40 feet, I mean, it's in 8 feet of water, and they can go down 40 feet, so they're really only digging a hole that's
30.
The 8 feet and then
20.
32.
Right.
And then it puts half of it back in,
16
it comes
hole.
Back up to 16,
16
or something like
hole.
That. So, and then a few years, you can't even go back and find where you were. It fills right back in, especially up there, Tri-Belt.
Right.
We don't know this place. Tri-Belt is just so much stuff travels by Tri-Belt, but up there in this curve here, but
mm-hmm.
It's filled. Everything that you can't even tell this far has been used now. It's so much stuff is coming in.
How many years do you think we'll get to this spot, Jim?
Well, let's get the first year in.
Okay.
I mean, we've gotten almost 16 out of this one. This one was 22. This one was about 10. So 32 acres we got 16 years out of. If there's 650 acres down here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's a lot of them.
So you should be able to get more bang for your buck by being this close, right?
Yes.
So with the money that you have, you'll probably be able to get more shell.
Yeah. Is the Corps going to be wanting some of this shell for projects?
Probably. Now that I won't be able to say that we don't have shell, yes, they will.
I mean, they're supposed to be looking at alternative substrates, though.
Yeah. I mean, Core wants to do stuff with alternative, and we want them to do something with Core alternative. But the problem with the Core is that for every dollar they spend, we have to – every $4 they spend, we have to give them a dollar. So if they're spending $2 million, we have to give them $500,000. And we've been giving them our match in the value of the shell, so that we didn't have to take cash from what we would be doing on harvest areas in order for them to do their sanctuaries. And this latest project that's going on at Gagdag, the Nature Conservancy came in and got some money to do the $500 match so that everything could be done in alternative, which is either broken granite or broken concrete. But if we get back where, you know, next year we don't have something like the Nature Conservancy, we'll have to get back probably into having shell match for the project, which is not good. But.
If they've got a project, then say, I'm just using for instance, say they want to go into Gang Tank, they pay them off, we want to spend $4 million in Gang Tank this year. They can force us to give them $1 million?
No, they can't do the project if we don't.
So we can say no by saying we're not going to make your.
We would like to have, but politically that doesn't play very well.
But I mean, can we really do that? Yeah, will we do that?
We could do it. But we have been trying to work with them. I mean, the areas that, I mean, this one in the Tiangtai is working out well for us because.
Yeah, I'm not talking about.
Well, I'm just saying.
I'm saying, saying that like 5 years from now, if they say we want to spend $20 million, I think we need to be able to say no. We're not going to give up these shells that you're talking about here that are starting to become more rare.
Yeah.
We don't need to be matching their
full design. Well, but in the case of Gang Tank, it's by them doing these new reefs in alternatives in areas that are away from where we were, that'll become sanctuary, and then we'll have more areas we can take seed off of.
I agree with all that. I just want to know whether we have to do this or we can say no. We don't have the match money. We don't want, or we want to spend our match money in good shells on a harvest pile.
They won't go for that, but yes, we can say no. So any questions on that? I mean, that's basically the plan, is just that all the money goes to shell.
Jim, I had a question about Pocomoke Sound. You said move shells that are already planted to a more suitable area. There's 40,000 associated with that. Where's that coming from?
The money?
Yeah.
The resource user fee.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, if it looked like we can do that, you know, and if we get it set again this year, you know, we'll probably have to keep on condensing the thing. I don't want to put any more new shells there when I've had 2 years in a row with nothing. Hopefully we'll be a set this year. But, cleaning some of the shells up on the outside and putting them on the inside to try to hopefully get a set.
So that's the entirety of the plan, the replenishment plan. Anybody have questions on any of that?
I mean, the notices are in there, but they're just right. Notices that go in with these activities.
Would it be possible on the going back to the seed planted in the Potomac tributaries to actually have someone like Wayne or anyone that was available to get a general idea of where this is going, so.
They're welcome to. I mean, a lot of guys see us planting out there. Yeah, when we're up there.
Just going back to the density and, yeah. You know, get it to a point that people are comfortable. Yeah, we can tong this amount, or we.
I mean, I'd be glad to, if I knew when they were going to plant the seed, just to go out there and throw four buoys over and say, would you plant them in this?
Yeah.
This is an optimal area.
Be nice if you, like we're talking about, if you can talk to any of those guys who are working for us for cheaper so we can get more, too, for the hand dog.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the prices of the hand dog seed has gotten very high.
So, Jim, where are we? This is all, you talked all about fossil shell. Where are we on the house shell?
$2. Anybody want to sell to $2 a bushel?
$2 a bushel is.
How come so little?
Because if we go any more than that, then it's over top of the it's higher than the.
You're paying anywhere from, in this report here, you're paying anywhere from 77 cents
to
$1.64.
Yeah, but that goes to the shucking house. Then you got to pay for all the work.
Transplant.
I understand.
Yeah.
But you just also said that it was a better product. That's what happened on Ferry Bar.
No, we had both. We had both dredge shell and house shell there.
Gotcha.
No, we planted a lot of areas. I mean, the set this year in Rappahannock was exceptional. And I've had to re-change all my graft axes because it jumped up so high. I mean, Butler's Hole, Broad Creek, a lot of those areas that ended up with 400 spat per meter, which is a good set in down there in past years would be 75 to 100. So, I mean, it just happens that this one is... We're ready to go harvest it this cycle, and it's so thick right now that if we take some up to Waterview, and we didn't get a very good set up the Rappahannock, we can run some of them up there, and at least year after next that area will be better for the hand scrapers up there in Area 7. So, got a little bit of set in Area 7 and 8, but not very much. That set kind of stopped right at Cole's Point. Didn't go really above that.
What about moving seed around inside the James, like from some place? I mean, thinning that out.
They're doing all right.
Hmm?
They're doing all right in the James.
Tommy?
Jim, that issue across the bay with the oysters off the edge, are we convinced we're getting these shells planted on where we're supposed to with these huge barges?
No, it wasn't that. I mean, we kind of used a waterman to help us set those areas up in the areas that they wanted to plant. And had they gotten a set, right off, we would have been all right. But it's not the best bottom, but it's bottom that, they've been catching stuff on. So, it's got kind of got spots in it that are real good. But it, that was, we took their numbers and we, used where they thought would be the best places for getting those two bars going. And we find shell. It's just that there are areas in it that I would like to get some of the shells back up so they get another shot at the spat set. So, and I think, it gives Jerry or anybody else that wants to do something to do out there, in the spring, there's not much going on.
Jim, I have a question about this sheet.
That's last year's work. Yeah.
This what?
That's last year.
Okay. So am I understanding this correctly to say the cost, you have a column here for the cost per bushel?
Yeah.
Is that per bushel or that's the cost?
It's both in there. Cost per bushel.
That's cost per bushel overboard?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm reading that as $2.55, right?
Right.
And that's for house show.
That's right.
And then if you flip the page over, the cost per bushel for the fossil shell is $4.19 and $3.07.
For those long ways, yeah, those way up.
That's the 77, between 77 cents and $1.64 that I was talking about right there.
But, if that was a $2 bushel, so if you go up to a dollar.
No, that was the difference between the $2.55 and the $3.07 or $4.19.
Yeah, but
overboard.
If it's $3, then it's $3.55.
I understand that. It's still cheaper than the fossil shell.
It is a two, yeah.
At three, it's still cheaper than the fossil shell at $4.19.
Well, not if we went that far. If we had to go that far, even with the house shell, it would be higher than that. Those are close runs there. Those are staying right in the river.
Lower Rappahannock, there's plenty of shells.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying the difference in those numbers is how far they're running to go plant the shells?
Yeah. Once you add to the three, then how far you go. We just didn't have any shells to run far last year, so everything was planted real close.
Any other questions? Jim, you mentioned Butler's Hole had a really good spat set, and that's on crushed granite.
Oh, it's on crushed granite as well as the shell plants that we did on shell tape.
So they, and they're the same? You see that this?
I mean, we got the highest set that we saw anywhere on the crushed granite. We had, I mean, it was like 600. It was like the jag type.
So how do you think that's going to translate into being harvestable?
Well, that's what we got to find out, because we've done it 2 years in a row. We've got good sets both times. Last year we used gravel that you would think would be gravel. The year before it was bigger, like the size of a shell. And it seems to us like the ones the size of a shell, when we go to harvest it, we're crushing everything in the dredge. These look a whole lot better. The stuff we did last year, both got a better set. And since you're talking about gravel size, they should not hurt, you know, the orchard attached to the piece of gravel shouldn't hurt the other orchards. But until we actually run through a harvest cycle, I mean, it looks very encouraging. The crushed granite looked really good. I mean, we've never seen.
Hasn't been harvested yet. Hasn't been through a harvest cycle. It's
no,
going to be coming up.
They're only spat right now.
Right, right. Okay.
The other ones are a year and a half. When we got them up this year, we were damaging them.
Right. Okay. So. Tommy.
Jim, is any consideration being given, or I guess I'm asking for consideration, to spend $100,000 on Blackberry Hang? That you could consider if you could still do it with house shells and get it within the range of what you're paying everywhere else.
Well, we did Blackberry last year, what we had.
But we got the upper end of it. We could, I mean, it just seems like it's producing good. It just doesn't, from what I'm hearing the watermen say, it's just not a lot of shell up there.
Not a lot of shell, and the problem is that with the money we have and the amount of shell, the way the shell is disappearing, because it disappears naturally, we just don't have any money to go do new areas. You know, all we can do is maintain the land. If we, you know, to go up and do some of those new areas we haven't been into, you'd have to get up to 5,000 bushels per acre or something like that. And that, then you're going to take away, 5 acres at 1,000 to get them back in productivity of a good area we have somewhere else. I mean, we have 1,300 acres right now that need shell bad, and we might be able to do 600 or 700. So if any area that we do over and above the maintenance is going to reduce that number. And, you know, if we decide to do that, and we can do that, it's just that you're giving up good areas in the Rappahannock, or you're giving up good areas in Tangier and stuff that need to be shelled to keep them going. I mean, I wish we had. I mean, I actually plotted this year, I mean, just for this meeting we're having tomorrow, we plot the public return of, about $20 million versus $2 million that we're putting in. I mean, we could use a whole lot more shell money and actually make it pay for itself with more acres. But, we just don't have it. And, I don't want it to just disappear from some of these really good areas because we didn't maintain them and went and did an area that we didn't have before, even though I would like to do that. But.
Are you pretty confident you're going to get $2 million again from the General Assembly this year?
I hope it's in there. It's in
there. It's in there right now.
It is?
So far, I mean, that's
no chance of getting that up.
I don't think anybody was. Everybody was not up to asking before this.
Scared to draw attention to it.
It was broached, and I think we should be happy to get the two at this point.
Yeah, but I think we can start building a case for more because of the economic return. I mean, $20 million for two is a pretty good economic return.
Any more questions?
Yeah, Jeff. $19 million that we take matching.
We're not matching any show this year.
For the Corps, we're not matching any. What did we do last year?
We've done our match. But we did at Fishing Point, and that Roman Point with concrete is a match for everything they're going to do this year. So we did our match last year.
Anyone else in the audience have a question? All right. You want to move on, or do you want to anybody have a, I don't know if we want to make a motion as SMAC to approve this and send it on to BMRC. Or you don't necessarily need one?
If you do that, that'd be great.
So moved. Okay.
Don made a motion.
I'll make a motion to accept staff recommendation.
All right. Tommy made the motion. You're second.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Passes unanimous. All right, Jim. Going on to harvest
right.
effort.
As you recall, we worked on effort control last year. We had a proposal before the commission that was passed and then was rescinded, and the commission said for us to come back and work on it this year. And today I just want to give you, where we are and then kind of see which way you all want to proceed and continue on this discussion. 2015, we had 991 user fees. Obviously, higher than it was when we did the effort control in the summer. This is where we are in 2015 with the hand scrape license and the dredge licenses and the patentong. I mean, patentong really jumped up this year. But dredge continued to increase, even though there was very little to catch out there in the dredge area this year. And the hand scrape, really came up in 2015. Where we were last year, when we presented that to the commission, we had taken both the people that were in the fishery and had never reported harvest, as well as those reporting less than 20 days of harvest for both hand scrapes and the dredge. And this is where we were for the hand scrapes, 603 people. Which is about 50%, 2% of the number of people. They were accounting for 9% of the harvest, is what we had recommended to be out of the fishery. And then the 541 that were in hand scrape that represented 91% of the harvest were the ones that stayed in. That's where we had left off. And same thing for the dredge. We had 479 people that represented 10% of the harvest that were out, and 206 people were in that represented 90% of the harvest. And the drawing board now is we're back to square one to look at these things. This is what the regulation says about the control date, which we kind of ignored last year. And it's pretty clear that control date, participation by any individual in any public orchard fishery after control date, will not be considered in the calculation or distribution of orchard fishing rights should entry limitations be established. And we certainly, everybody that comes in, at least through our office, we do tell them that, the control date, and you buy the license, you're doing it, that, you could forfeit your right to continue. So that's in regulation. It's been in regulation since 2014 that we can now consider if we want to.
Jim,
looking at the numbers, yeah.
That could apply to hand-tonging as well?
Yeah, could. If we set a limited entry on, that's only if we decide to do a limited entry. We've had 378 user fees since the control date of the 991 that we have. And so that would leave 613 that were in before the control date. So I think today we just wanted to hear your thoughts on how to proceed.
If we go back to 2014 numbers, how many hand scrapers do you have?
2000.
And if you eliminate the ones that didn't report or didn't harvest, where do we get then? Do you have an idea, kind of?
Of that? No, we haven't looked at that yet. It is. Yeah. I mean, it was included in that other grant as part of that. That we, you know, all the work that we had done in those other areas, we had all those. They had to do harvest in one of the 2 years or both years.
So, Jim, you're looking for just discussion. There's nothing.
Yeah, right now. I mean, that's just that's where we are with this. The way we had attempted is, you know, it has to either be redone or something.
Yeah, Rob.
I just want to mention, I don't know who, I know some of you were at the commission meeting when they overturned their decision, because I did see some of you there, of course, but some of you may not have been. And the basis at the time was that some of the commission members got turned around by the fact that what was proposed was a 20-day threshold in 1 year if you did one of those two seasons, or if both seasons, it would be the average. So there was a lot of confusion about that. And as we also know, there was a lot of pressure on the commission. But I know several of the commission members have expectations that something gets done on effort control. I mean, that was stated pretty clearly. I think Mr. Zedron in particular was thinking, well, can we get this done, you know, in a few months? And then there was some talk there, and then it was decided maybe by the summer, something could happen by the summer. But clearly what has changed since last time around is it is the committee's responsibility to ensure that you go forward, because staff presented many different types of information and data, including information on all the harvests that someone had, all these individuals had, were they in other fisheries, you know, what did they do over the time period, everything. I mean, we kept on pouring out information, meeting after meeting. So there's a real desire by the commission to have something to go forward. But the reason Jim is saying initially, what do you want to do? Because it's pretty clear we pulled everything we had last year. It's still there, some combination of that or maybe some difference of that. But that's where things stand. But I just want to make sure everyone knows that the commission definitely wants to see, you know, effort control in some fashion. It's just whatever was available last time was deemed to be either too hasty, not thought out enough, you know, a lot of different reasons. But the end result is that we're back not quite where we started, because I think the committee has a, you know, has the say. That's why Jim's asking it.
Are they inclined to think that it's more appropriate to have a reduction in the harvest or taking away people's right to be able to dredge?
Well, I don't think they said right, but I think the sentiment is that the fishery has really grown fast in terms of effort. And I think the other thing that we also talked about many times, in which I thought staff was bringing forward last time, was not to take away anyone's right, but to make sure those who had some investment in the fishery, more than just having just come in, reserve or preserve their right. But the commission didn't really talk about that as much. They talked more that they're very aware that the amount of effort that has come into this fishery has been substantial just in the last few years. But I mean, again, this is something that we have the information. We can call it back up as you go along, but it's February. So, I mean, we've got a few months to come to some idea where the committee has an idea.
I'm sorry, I'm kind of confused by that answer. But what I was meant to ask was, do they seem to think it would be more appropriate to have a reduction in the amount of product that fishermen could catch, or do they seem to think it would be more appropriate to eliminate the dredge permit that some people have?
Well, your terms are rather blunt.
Well, what they want to do is pretty blunt, too, when you take people's...
Effort control is what they're talking about. So, same thing we talked about.
I mean, we can do it by reducing bushels.
Well, I'm just trying to... You said there's a number of people on the board that are antsy about getting something done. They don't tell you what they would like to see. They just tell you they want something done.
They think the effort is too high in the fishery, and a lot of that's why they set the control date.
That's a broad generalization for the whole commission to say they think there's too much effort in the fishery.
Yeah. Well, just going
if that came out of that meeting, I missed that. Right.
I would only make the comment that we did put in some effort controls. We did require one day.
Fridays.
On Fridays were eliminated.
Perfectly.
So we did some things. I mean, I understand that, you know, clearly we rescinded the removal of licenses. But
they acknowledge that occurred?
Yes, they said that. So
but that they're not satisfied with that is what you're saying?
No one said they were dissatisfied.
From who I've talked to and what I heard at the meeting. So, again, I mean, some of the commission members have talked beyond that meeting as well. So they have expectations.
But that's
yes,
not...
you did do effort control.
That's not every member, though. That's just a few. Let me review history. I think when we voted on this in this committee, we voted to do nothing. Am I correct?
That's right.
All right. And then the confusion that happened with the commission was 20%, 20 days or less, if you lose your license. Y'all broke it down by gear type when everybody thought it was in general overall. In other words, you could have worked 19 days in dredge and 19 days in hand scrape, and you would have lost your license in both. But the way that the commission and this committee, we got it as an overall combined gear type. Y'all broke it down individually in gear type.
20 days was the confusing.
Yes, I think that's
average.
How. Yeah.
And also the average was confusing to some. Not that they didn't know what an average was, but they didn't know where that came from.
Did you come up with some kind of a figure as to what the reduction in harvest was based on the diminishment of days that could be worked?
Last year?
Yes, that's correct, yes.
Yeah, it was a very small amount.
So it was like
9%, I think.
9%?
Yeah, something like that.
But, I mean, the fact is, I mean, these errors were done, you know, did not make it the full 2 months, like in Rappahannock, even
okay.
With one day long.
But remember that...
You would like to get it so you could make the whole 2 months.
The net result was zero because the 9% is what those folks contributed.
Mm-hmm.
But it was taken by those who were left in the fishery, so it wouldn't be a reduction.
How do we know that when Jim just said the catch for the season hadn't even been, it's just starting to come in?
No, what was said last year was that this was looked at as harvest neutral. It was just a matter that it did end up with those who would have accounted for 9% wouldn't have. So you have to know that someone would have accounted for that 9% who was in the fishery. So, but again, you know, my main concern is that this is more a committee situation, but staff has the information. I think last time we did it incorrectly. I think staff kept on coming to you with more scenarios, more options, and it probably was too much.
Well, the people that you have talked to that have given you the basis for what you're saying to us at this point in time, what is the percentage you think that would satisfy them? Boy,
I don't know. I think that's something the committee has to.
Well, I mean, you said that what happened, what's occurred thus far is not sufficient. So
you advise the commission. You don't advise staff. You advise the commission. The commission's advisory group.
No, I understand that.
That's where it ends up.
But, you know, the opinions that you have suggested that we utilize to make a decision, and I would like to know what your opinion is from what they're saying to help us make a decision. You've offered opinions before.
It was not announced at that meeting, but I guarantee you, if you listen to the tape, uh-huh, you'll hear that the commission had expectations that the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee would continue to work on effort control. That's pretty much.
So you think,
a percentage given or anything else.
So that the 9% you're talking about now, if that were to increase to 18%, would they, you think that would be a nice movement on our part?
It has to be what the committee thinks.
That's what I'm saying. That would be what
the committee thinks. You know, that's a good role to be in, quite frankly.
Tommy, you had a comment?
Yeah, I just would like to be on record. I pulled some numbers today. We had 80% of the oystermen on December 31st that had their limit in area, the last area open in the Rappahannock. We didn't see people not catching their limit at the end, and it's, I've got the number here. I don't know what percentage. I know Jim said the reporting's slow to come in. I don't know what percentage we bought, but it was a very respectable harvest in the Rappahannock this year. I could only hope that we would continue to see it.
I'll have to second that on Tommy. And it was pretty consistent all the way through the year. We didn't see much reduction.
But it would have been nice if those guys could have stayed, more guys could have stayed, rather than having to go to the Jenny.
Jeff.
I think the commission was misled in the reading of how much reduction that taking that one day a week did, because it was a lot. They sit here and say, it took me a lot, because those 3 months, there was new areas opening each month. And you take that away, that those guys were catching their limit on that and would have caught it that Friday. They didn't. It took a lot of, and I think the commission's misled in how much effort that is really taken away. And I also think that y'all should consider making that for the 6 month season, taking that Friday away, to take to them and say, listen, we're adding on, we're trying to take more away, because it only happened for the 3 months. After January 1, they can start working Fridays again. And in our business, we were seeing a surplus of oysters that we were having to do something with. And I just think the commission very misled on how much that little thing did amount to a lot.
Tommy,
what do you think the commission would say about cutting license issuance off at the end, whatever it was at the end of 2015?
The system has detected that a minimum number of lines are connected to this conference. Do you want to continue your meeting?
So cut it off at whatever it was at the end of 2015 and then allow for transferability. I mean, that's something.
And you mean at the 991?
Yeah, I mean, I know that's it's something.
I don't think you'd want to allow transfer at that point. There's a whole lot of zeros out now in that.
Zeros as far as what? Zeros that didn't harvest?
Yeah, it didn't work. If you let somebody with
I'm back with that, like the other crabs, they didn't hurt them.
Yeah, but if they transfer there to somebody that would, that would.
I think you think a whole lot of that's going to happen today.
All right, then.
People protecting their rights with that.
Yeah. Ben.
My question and a piece of information that I'd like to see in this decision would be what percentage of the public bottom is open to this effort? Are we applying this effort on 50% of the available public bottom, 70%, 20%? That's certainly in all the rest of these statistics that y'all compiled, something that would help in making a decision, because one alternative other than cutting is opening, and there's nothing that says anything sitting on the Baylor bottom cannot be opened. So that is another alternative to go down. Instead of everybody focusing on cutting, maybe we need to turn a little towards opening as well. and take advantage of a boom in an industry that's been dead for 30 years.
So you're suggesting opening other additional areas?
Additional areas, as well as, again, I'd like to see the numbers of what percentage right now. Say, I know with a rotational it'd be different each year, but say for 2014 and 2015, what percentage of the bottom was subjected to the effort that we're so apparently concerned with?
There's really not that much area that's out there that's not in some harvest area.
Other than the sanctuary at Brack Shoals, the sanctuary. I mean, there is a. That's a lot of bottom. When all of it's productive, that's a whole lot of bottom.
Yeah. Used to be a lot more, if you remember, right?
Yeah, I mean that's 700 acres. When I bet you 99% of that 700 acres is productive bottom. And again, it's an alternative to look at versus the answer doesn't have to be squeeze, squeeze, squeeze. There are other alternatives out there. And I think from being at the commission meeting, that's what I gathered from the commission, is they wanted to hear all of the alternatives, not this is where we're at, this is what we need to do, and be asked to make a decision that afternoon.
And if I think that's a good point. And if I could just say, I think there was a lot going on last year with a lot of information, a lot of data presented, a lot of alternatives. And the commission was reacting to what this committee did as well as what staff presented. And what was presented in front of the commission was, we have a dire situation, or we anticipate that there's a dire situation in the fishery. There's been a large increase in the number of harvesters out there, and we're concerned that the harvest is going to go down due to the failed spat sets that were not seen in previous years. So the commission, I think, felt compelled to do something in light of that information. So the commission is reacting to what they hear and what is presented to them, whether from this committee or whether from, you know, staff. And sometimes they're the same, sometimes they're different. So I agree that there was further discussion about effort control, in addition to what was already in place. But if we're indicating, staff and this committee to the commission, that harvest, we anticipate that in 2015-16 harvest has been roughly a good harvest or the same, anticipating that we took that day off on Friday, that I'm not sure the commission would say, or I should speak for myself maybe, that, you know, there's new information that became available that we need to look at, and maybe effort control in that sense, that we're talking about licenses here, removing those licenses isn't absolutely necessary.
Well, you know, it's hard to recreate what's already done. That's not going to work. So what was proposed before is obviously not going to fly now.
That's correct.
I'm certainly open to other ideas. I don't think anyone minimized the Friday aspect because that was brand new. I know that put some impact in certain places to have that particular day. Remember, it was Wednesday going in, and then it shifted to Friday. So, you know, my thoughts are whatever you want to come up with, then, you know, it goes to the commission. But I hope you take the time to think about it. If it really is more areas, then Jim needs to let you know what the possibility is there. If you have an idea that maybe this Friday is something that can be tolerated, that's fine. You know, there is something called recoupment, though. So what that means is you make up for what's lost, right? So if you go from 600 and some hand scrapers to 900, even with Fridays off, you've got more effort out there, picking up what, you know, maybe would have been taken anyway. Hard to say. So a lot to think about. I don't think staff is in a position to give you more information until you say, well, let's look at this. And if you ask us to look at something, we'll look at it. But you have to have some not only private thoughts about what should be done, you know, they have to be with the committee, they have to be public. So.
Tom?
Is there a moratorium on the issuance of new licenses now? So it's still
no.
open.
No.
Why not?
It's been hanging on there in September.
All that effort control section went. The whole thing.
So the thing that I'm wrestling with is I've realized this is a limited amount of resource, and we stand the chance of having reduced harvest next year. But our commercial registration card, the thing that I wrestle with the most is that when it was initially set up, it was supposed to allow us to move between fisheries. And what's happened is we've become crabbers or we've become oystermen. We used to be clammers, and now that's gone. So man, that's what I'm struggling with is, you know, for the guys that depend on the wild commercial fishery full-time, it's pigeonholing everyone. And
there are very many brand new ones in that
town. Yeah.
Yeah, but
Along the lines of what AJ had to say, with it was presented to the commission in a, for lack of a better way to put it, a panic situation, a dire situation, something had to be done. And I think this dire situation terminology should certainly be left alone until the 15-16 season numbers can be compiled and see how we match up to that 230,000 bushel estimate. And as I made the motion back in August or September, whichever it was, to do just that and see where we stand. If we caught 250,000 bushels, maybe it isn't a dire situation. If it was projected to 230 and we only caught 150, then yeah, maybe it is a dire situation. But you throw that emphasis on a dire situation, a potential crash in the industry in front of seven people with only two of the members of that commission having strong industry knowledge and ties, and everyone's knee-jerk reaction is, oh Lord, we got to do something. We better do something. We can't have this happen on our watch. We don't want to be the commissioners when there was this catastrophic, whatever it may be. And presenting it that way is unfair to anybody else objecting, because the commission looks at staff to have the knowledge, to have the numbers, and present them fair and unbiased. And when y'all scream dire situation, they can't help but think it is a dire situation. And I would dare say when the numbers come back in from the season, it turned out to be anything but a dire situation.
So let's see. We probably are about 3 months behind. Well, we won't know in time.
I think that's an importance to, is how we match. To, I think that's an important statistic how we match to that projection.
Tommy,
I would like to hear from the other, from the waterman on the panel or the waterman from the floor on what the feeling is. And I'll never make the motion again. But February last year made a motion to halt any new sales, and it wound up being any sales period, which wasn't the intention. But I would like to know if it's the will of most of the watermen to cap it where we're at now as a start, or whether everyone feels that we should continue to leave it open.
You know, I can give a little insight on what the oyster season did to me. It probably cost me about 20 days of work because of taking Fridays off with October, November, and December. And the price of oysters this year was a little bit less. And it probably cost me for those 3 months probably $7,000
to $8,000. I agree, Wayne, but same situation. Yeah.
How do you feel about it needing to be capped now at, not what is it, 9 to 16, whatever we're at as a start?
Well, that certainly be a start, yes, but I think we're going to have to do a little more than that down the line in order for a regular waterman that makes his living off the water to be able to survive. I mean, the more we cut, the more we stretch it thinner and thinner and thinner, it's going to put people out of business.
I guess my thinking is we're sitting here, obviously, we need to have this conversation and talk about it, what the end result is. Or I think Ben's got a good point in that you've got to define a dire situation. But the fact that, you know, we've gone 24 months into this process and we still have an open fishery, you know, I've asked the question. I was explained that what we did last February was still part of effort reduction, and when the commission overturned it, they overturned everything. But I still don't quite get why we're continuing to allow folks. I mean, tomorrow 15 more people can enter, and you're just adding to the problem for all these, for the 900 that are already there.
So what you do is really for 2017 anyway.
Well, my question is, if it's the will of the waterman, and I don't think I'm the person to make this decision, I would be in favor of it if it were, but do we cap it today where we're at? And then, I mean, you're exasperating your problem in my mind to continue to add more and more people and then talk about having to go back. One of the biggest issues I have with this is allowing people to continue to spend thousands of dollars in investments. And I know not all of them do. Some of them are, you know, just the third man. But the ability of someone to buy a $50,000 rig tomorrow, buy a license, and then next year it be determined they've got to get out, it's not fair to them, nor in my mind is it fair to everybody else here that's in the fishery. So my question is, you know, do we have the latitude or is the will there to cap it where we're at today? And then we can have the conversation about transfers or getting the young people in. But I guess my answer is, how far do you get? Is it 1,500 licenses? Where is the number that we stop knowing that we're still going down the road of having to do something?
Another way to do that, I think, is there's a control date of July 1, 2014. You could move the control date. Correspond to whatever the committee thought was the right date to move it to. Because trying to cap today is obviously going to be something the commission would do by an emergency regulation. the alternative is we're going pretty quickly just on that one situation. The alternative is probably to look at the control date. Where would that best be placed? I'd want a little backup from our Attorney General's office to say that you can move the control date. But I'm pretty sure you could because it's set further back in history. So if you move it closer to the present, but not quite, it's probably another strategy. So that I'm just throwing that out as far as, you know.
We did have a freeze on licenses.
Yeah, we did.
At the same time that we did have a freeze on the licenses that we. I think that's what Tommy's talking about.
Yeah, I didn't see that parallel with what the commission did because SMAC made a motion or made a recommendation to the commission last February to cap licenses, which were done. And then I guess parallel to that, the commission made a decision that was overturned. At what point did those two intersect?
At the commission meeting where they overturned effort control, the freeze was part in that effort control section. The commission was shown the entire regulation, and there were questions about two of the parts of that effort control section. You know, it went from like A to G or something like that as far as paragraphs. And I answered both the questions there, but pretty much that whole section went. That's how it went.
Tommy, you had a question.
Yeah. If I was doing this full time, like some of these guys dredging for a living in the wintertime, I would have to agree with Tommy. I would think I wouldn't want to see this continue to be open. So it's unfortunate that part of the regulation got thrown out. But how, if something like that were to be imposed now, how could you do it quickly so that you don't have a run on licenses?
If you do it Tuesday at the committee meeting.
It's coming Tuesday?
Emergency. Yeah, it could be Tuesday.
I think most of y'all are just talking about
Freezer license.
Hands crazy.
Overturned.
Correct.
I mean, that's what I'd be the most concerned about. I mean, I think Anton is going to take care of itself.
Well, I mean, some degree. I have Pat on it because of how many came out this year.
Yeah, I would agree with Pat Don.
All right, I'm going to take a few comments from the floor. Jeff.
How many cars are there out there? How many cars?
Do you have
Sir, you got a comment?
Yes, sir. I'm a BMRC agent selling licenses in Gloucester Point. And I know from personal interaction with the waterman, as I'm a waterman myself, I personally bought the Drudge license this year for myself and my two employees just to protect the rights so that had I the need to go to the Eastern Shore and work that area in the future, I would have it. Even though I didn't have any intention of going this year or needing that license, that there's a vast majority of people that come through my office daily that are purchasing license because the fishery was reopened and they're trying to protect their right to do it. And the number of new harvesters, I'm sure, is high to have little or no harvest. So the added new licenses
thank you. Anybody else have a comment?
Yes, okay. Do you have a screen that shows how many licenses were issued? Go back to the control date since, you know, from July 2014 to the present time.
It was 368. Yeah, I concur with the gentleman down here that sells licenses. You know, I know watermen this year, they did everything they could, stopped doing what they were doing that was productive just so to go oyster. So, man, I got to get my 20 days in or I'll lose my license.
July 2014, you had to have one on.
Right, so then in 2015, everybody had to have Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, you multiply 378 times 3, what do you come up with? The same number of people, the same number of votes are working. It's no more people working. It's you required everybody to have a license. I mean, it's an imaginary number. True. When you make the number, you can make the numbers look any way you want. When you multiply 3 times 378, that's higher than 991. That comes more in line with everybody on the vote has to have a straight license. Before, you didn't. It was just one per vessel. Now it's 3. Everybody that's on the boat, it's 3 on any crew. Everybody has to have the hand straight license, whereas when the user fee, the control date, so to speak, only one person on that boat had a hand. You can have 3 in crew, 2 in crew. You can have a 16 bushel limit or a 24 bushel limit, and then they change it to make everybody get the hand straight license. So no matter, each crew member had to go and buy a straight license. I mean, some of these numbers are.
He's right.
I mean, I'm not. Right. Don't get me wrong. All I got is a high school diploma, but I think if I get a country, I can multiply 3 times 378 and figure that's higher than 991. I mean, that's a simple number. Y'all are using the figures from staff or wherever you're using them from, and they're not really indicative as to how many. They say, see, they've got a hand strip license of 653. Before it was 378 on health piece of paper.
No, you're getting user fees and
hand-scrape. Like this. So that's how many hand-scrape licenses were issued in
2000. Yeah, see, before it didn't have to have user fees.
And you only had to have one, correct?
No, in 2014.
But you just said many ago, you had to have just one in 2000.
You're talking about January 1st until the end of the 2013-14 season, you only had to have one. But come the fall of 2014, everybody had one.
Fall 2014.
So that's this number right here, the 653.
That's the actual number. It's not 378.
No, the 378 is how many people bought a user fee after control date.
But you can't hand trigger a user fee.
Yeah, but you can't hand them, so the numbers are not.
Right, but I'm saying you say it was 378 bought a user fee, correct?
378 new ones bought the user fee after July 1st, 2014.
So your hand-scrape license was 653, and you say that there was only one person with your double? I just asked you the question, or somebody answered and said there was only one person that had the hand-scrape license when the number was 653.
No, 3 had to have it.
3?
Yeah. Everybody had to have it. 2, 3, however many was on the boat.
Then what was it in 2013?
One of them. I don't have 13 up here. I don't have
13.
Well, it doesn't make any sense to put that up because everybody didn't have to have them. That's why you use the user fee.
So you use the user fee to tell me how many people were in the business, correct?
How many people can work any gear right now in the fishery is the user fee.
Somewhere down the line, these numbers don't.
Well, you don't have the same people each year.
I know what you're saying. You have to have a user fee to have a hand strike.
Yep, and it's not. Of the 991, 908 have hand strike.
991
user fees. 991 user fees. 908 of them have hand strike ones.
Something doesn't seem to be here. When the numbers first came out, it was showing that there was small number of people in the team. And then within a 2-year time frame, you're talking 900 and some people have gotten into the team. Or 600 and some is what you tell them. You go from 300, the number that was a while ago was 378.
378 are brand new people
brand
that got
new
user fees. The people that got user fees that didn't have them before July.
But they were all having work time was after.
No, they weren't working on the boat though. They had to have a user fee in order to get a limit. They did not have to have a hand-strength license. You had to have a user fee. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Instead of, I know this control data you were 2013, and I know you say more people got on the fish run, right? Wouldn't it be smaller to cap the cabin where it's at today? And then when you look at the average age of your waterman, is anywhere from 55 to 70. And as they die off, instead of reissuing, get it that way, instead of putting these young boys saying? You got a lot of old water, a lot of older ones.
Like me.
I mean, at least you can put them out of work.
Any other questions from the committee? Tommy.
To that point, is there an easy statistic on the age? And you probably gave it to us last year, and I apologize. I don't recall it, but.
We actually.
Pretty close to what you said.
58 to 60 or something.
Median age or something? I mean, we haven't.
I used to be one of the youngest, but I'm one of the oldest.
Feeling too. 2015, the average age is 48, and the median age is 50. That means 50, there's half above 50 and half below 50.
Okay. There you go.
How many do you have over 65?
Over 65, you have 60 plus, which is 227.
How many do you have below the age of 30?
Below 30?
130.
140. I'm just saying, I can figure something out. Just like you said,
they didn't do waiver. Yeah.
But
Jim. So, we're having this discussion about effort control, and that's good.
Yeah.
The idea is that if, in fact, something needs to go in place, or this committee feels something needs to go into place for the fishery, it would have to be August of this year, that it would be to the commission.
Well, I mean, is that, in order for it to happen in 2017, we want it to happen this year no matter what we do.
Because the license vets it, right. But it could be January 1, 2017.
That's right.
Okay. So does everybody understand that that's what we're talking about for effort control?
We can cap the number of licenses.
Now, I'm not talking about that right now. I'm just saying with effort control, what they're talking about, we're talking about licenses, the number 600, 900, 378, all this stuff. Everybody understands that that was a confusing point last year, that we thought the licenses were going to take effect October 1, and it wasn't until January 1. So I just want to be clear where we are, that we're talking about January 1, 2017, if, in fact, anything with the licenses were to move forward.
We can wait until management reporting is in, but it just means that this committee will have to work much, you know, instead
shorter
of being
time
once a month,
right.
We might have to meet once every 2 weeks to get it done. We need two or three meetings.
So that was my other question. You know, how many meetings do we have scheduled? Usually we're talking about our next meeting is.
We really don't have to have another meeting until we, if you don't want, I mean, if you have some ideas that you want to present to you, you know, we can have a meeting before then. But if you want to wait and see the harvest, then you know we're going to have to wait at least until June, because there'll be very little. I mean, hand scraping is done. All we have to wait is to get in the dredge season that finishes end of this month.
So there are a couple of things. We're probably, I'm not speaking for the committee by any means, but like to see the numbers for the season, right? Yeah. And then also on Ben's idea. I don't want to speak for you, but maybe that see the percentage of area that public ground that is open now, and would there be other certain percentage area that could be open? Would that be able, would those numbers be able to be available come June or?
I mean, you know, that's a very, you start looking at these little teeny weeny public grounds way up the Rappahannock, little teeny public grounds way up all these rivers. And it'll take a while just to add all them up, but because there are a lot of little ones that nobody will ever have any intention of ever going there. There haven't been nothing but mud. You know, I mean, the majority of the areas that we don't open right now are mud. I mean, you could catch a few oysters that maybe are on crab pots and stuff like that, but you know, the areas that have good bottom and have had shells on them are 100% open.
They're either in a rotation or they're part of the. Okay.
I mean, there's no area sitting out there that's undiscovered.
Are they all being worked?
Huh?
Are they all being worked?
No, we don't work areas that are just plain mud. We just leave those shut.
No, I was talking about like all the areas, like Area 9.
All the replenishment areas you saw.
How many boats worked up the river this year, shaft only, in the Rappahannock?
Well, If you did, but I don't know.
I don't think it was many. I think it's, we need to do something with that area. It would help a lot.
I mean, the only thing you can do is move seat up there. And we have the same issue. We don't get any set up there.
Hmm?
We don't get a spat set up there.
Yeah, but what's up there as big as your hand?
You see what?
What's up there as big as your hand? Just dying.
Well, but it's no set up there, so they're very old orchards.
Tony, I was going to say, I think at a bare minimum, we need to cap the licenses.
That might be a motion, I think, by the time we're done.
We need to do that Tuesday.
I mean, Tuesday. I mean,
Rich.
Several things here. One, talking about licenses, that's at 2017, but they can cut a day out and do anything like that prior, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, second thing is I want to talk about Patent Tom. It's been very successful on Deep Rock this year. Is there any way in the future, and Tom, you can chime in on this because you get them, could maybe open up more area for Patent Tom?
Well, it just takes away from hand trappers, but it's right now it's limited.
What about shaft on it?
Well, it seems like, Patent Tom, we put the shells right back. It seems like there's a better bottom. We don't lose a shell as much. And I didn't know with areas, even that one number 9 you're talking about, could we do that, hit that with Patent Tom?
If you do, I mean, that's an area that gets no set. It's just like these areas have been opened in the Rapid and the Potomac.
Okay.
How about from the bridge to Mosquito Point on the other side of the road? It isn't doing anybody no good.
Huh?
It's doing nobody no good. From the Rappahannock Bridge down to Mosquito Point on the north side.
Butler's Hole is over there. So we've been working that.
No, I said from Mosquito Point to the bridge.
We have a couple of really good sanctuaries over there.
Ben, you had a comment.
We'll leave alone.
But I mean, that's 4 miles doing nobody no good.
In my request for the percentage of public bottom that was open, I'm speaking of the sanctuaries as well. Because, again, there's nothing in the Code of Virginia that says they have to be sanctuaries or that they can't be put into a rotation or they can't be 100% open. They're closed into a sanctuary at the recommendation of staff, which is here in front of us. That's what holds them in sanctuary. There is ample opportunity if you want to look at different ways of looking at effort, and one that would be very interesting to see along the lines of this acreage thing would be how many acres per individual are open in the state of Virginia for what period of time. Something that I know it may take some time to compile, but we certainly have time. And again, with it being a statistic, maybe there's a happy medium in there that staff would say, okay, we like, I mean, 10 acres to the man, 20 acres to the man, 2 acres to the man. And instead of, again, figuring out how we're going to put people out of the industry or keep them from getting into the last public industry in this state, maybe we need to figure out how we can fit them into what assets we have instead of putting what assets we have on hold for nothing, essentially, until the next time MSX and Dermo come through and they disappear in nothing but a shell pile. I mean, I the fact that everyone is stuck on cut, limit is, I'm afraid, partially because we got that hammered on us last year for all the 6-7 meetings that we had. That was a necessity, and it's not. This industry will limit itself. When the oysters aren't there to be caught, people will stop getting in it. When people can't go make the money that they make now by 9 o'clock in the morning, some people are going to stop getting in it because they can't leave that job to go to the next one. It will regulate itself. Put enough bottom out there for the people that want to work to go to work and let the industry take care of itself. If that puts so many oysters on the market that the price of oysters goes to $25, that'll regulate some of it. There's more factors at play than just cut people out of it, put people out of it.
I agree, Ben. I think the market and the rocks will take care of themselves. It's such a factor we don't take in consideration, or staff doesn't take into consideration sometimes.
You can't afford, you can't starve long enough to catch the last one.
Yeah, but
anybody that works on the water will tell you that.
You gotta remember is that the part that's in there that you're missing is that is the damage you do to the shells by having so many people on these areas.
Spread them out.
That are.
Spread them out.
There's just not areas out there like you think are out there.
This area he was speaking of, again, there's rack shoals in James River. The areas are there. They don't have to be held in sanctuary. Again, there's nothing that requires them to be sanctuary other than your will. That is what's holding them today in sanctuary. There's nothing in the code that says they have to be there. There's nothing in the code that says you can't take them out at the next commission meeting. And spread people out. Keep them from beating up these places they beat up for years and years. Spread them out.
It's just like Parrish and Rappahannock. We beat that. I mean, it was dredged to death because it couldn't go nowhere. One little rock, and the whole river opened.
Yeah, I think.
I mean,
the Temple Bay was worse. I mean, you know, yeah. Size wise.
Tommy.
Could we look at this in? I mean, would it be easier to do this in a map form? To be able to look at the sanctuaries and the open areas. I mean, to Ernie's point, if I read this right, Parrott's Rock that was open this year is 11.1 acres, and Parrott's Rock Sanctuary and Parrott's Rock West, which are set aside in sanctuary, was 18.6 acres.
Those are the ones that we shell. Those are shell plants that we monitor.
Again, more in sanctuary than...
The sanctuary is very small there.
Bigger than the public.
It's just like the keratoma.
The place that we shell is bigger than the public, but it's not.
They took the keratoma from us and didn't give us anything in place for that to work on.
There's only one rock up there.
I know, but that was one rock less we got.
But those orchards just do not make it. So.
Well, I know boats have worked up out that hole the last time it was open. They just took that away and didn't give us anything back.
And we moved seed out of there and put it on other areas. So.
Put it up there where it wasn't nothing last time.
August.
Yeah.
Looks good now.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is you took our area from us, and we can't never go back out. You need to open something else up. You can't keep taking and adding boats. It ain't going to work.
That's right.
So I've heard the area... couple of years now at least of the more areas, so I mean I think we ought to at least get a chart and go through that next time we get together. And you know Jim's gonna have to have his information but your information too about what's entirely mud or unproductive or maybe productive, that type of situation. But you know this is a recurring theme, so let's do that. That's three things.
As a last note, we've talked about coming back in June and looking at the numbers. I think everybody here needs to make sure that every waterman knows how imperative it is to get these numbers in, because 20,000, 30,000 bushels that don't get reported are going to be a huge factor in this conversation going forward. So Mr. France alluded to it earlier. I don't think anyone has a clue that not reporting is cutting all of our throats, but that's going to be an important part of this, is to see that this fishery either maintained, got better, or, God forbid, has gotten worse. And if you don't report, it's sure going to show it got worse.
Now, Tom is exactly right. You know, every OSU report helps this industry, and it helps the watermen also.
Well, then you got to look at the days we missed, too. Oh, that's got to go into factor that they ain't going to be on the report.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, 3 months we missed a day each week. I mean, each week.
That's 20%.
That's 20%.
In the Rappahannock, yes.
Correct.
I won't say everybody caught their limit every day. You had guys that did, but at the end of the season, we had 80% that were catching their limit.
Well, that's the same on Danger. In my place, most everybody caught their limit every day. And that's, you have to take the Fridays out of that equation for the month of November, maybe somewhere. But January, everybody caught their limit every day. I mean, there might be somebody caught 22 or 23 or 15 like that, but the majority of them, I'd say 95% of them caught their limit every day. And to some extent, at the very beginning versus last year, every year it's been about as far as the time schedule has been, as far as the boats coming in. Every year they're coming in earlier. So I think the numbers are going to be, unless somebody comes with something way off the wall and nobody's expecting, you've got to take 20% out. You lost one day the month of November and December, you've got to take 20% out of that equation. So whatever that bushel comes to the next 2 months, you have to subtract the 20% because that was regulated by DMRC that they lost.
But then we'll have to also add in the extra watermen that were oystering.
But it's just in my point being it's imperative that everybody report. I mean, it's only going to help the case to get the numbers.
It's only going to help in front of the commission.
Absolutely. Or the General Assembly.
Or
that I do think Jim's point of $20 million and spending two, and if we do show an increase in the fishery, I do think we've got grounds to go to General Assembly and ask for more money. Those of us that have been to Richmond, it's a jobs administration right now, and I think, if we can show a higher harvest, then we've got grounds to request more replenishment, particularly if we're able to hold with the type of numbers that we've got.
So does everybody understand kind of where we are with the time frame? I think we're going to wait for the harvest numbers for the season, and that might be available in June. So maybe we'd have another meeting in June.
Maybe couple nothing on May.
So it might be May or June, I guess. The question outstanding that we had here tonight, I guess, is are we going to recommend, is this committee going to recommend to the full commission on Tuesday that a moratorium be put on any issuing any new licenses in the oyster fishery? Or how does this committee have any preference on that moving forward to the commission as a recommendation?
That would happen immediately.
Well, it could be. I think this committee could make a recommendation to the full commission that it would be under an emergency or it would be public noticed and it would be.
We did this last February, actually. So.
Just a recommendation or you want a motion?
That's up to the committee.
Because I would make a motion that we freeze the sale of any new license until this issue is resolved.
Make it effective today?
No, it'll be Tuesday. The commission, if they decide on it. But is that every license? That's hand scrape, dredge. That's patent dong.
I was going to ask that to the committee for discussion. What would they like to freeze? All of it, or just hand scrape? Or
well, it's your motion. So,
how about user fees only, and then it still allows people to move between gear types.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
You still are free, am I correct? You'd still freeze the number of people that could oyster, but it would give the oysterman the latitude to patent tong, dredge, hand scrape, or chaff tong, or harvest by hand.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So aquaculturists pay the user fee?
Yep.
You're talking about the all gear user fee.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. I don't know that's what Tommy's talking about.
I'm talking about the wild,
the all-gear user fee, not the aquaculture, not the hand-by-hand, all-gear
$300. Okay. $300 fee,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll second the motion, Wayne.
And what would that be effective as of?
Tuesday.
If the commission passes it.
If it passes,
it would be Tuesday if the commission passes.
24th.
Excuse me? What did you say, Jim?
24th.
Tuesday. If they agree with it.
And would that be presented to the commission in the way that he just described?
Yeah.
So that it's done it in the functionality of it so the fishermen can pass from one way of harvest to another instead of just.
Over top of everything.
I think that's important that it be presented to them that way. A lot of them wouldn't understand.
They'll understand.
One last question based on what happened last year. This would be any user fee of any new person. It would not be, because the motion that was made last year was to cap the license, and it came out, these guys had been working for 25 years, went to buy a license and couldn't buy it. So I'm assuming the intention is anyone new to the fishery.
I mean, you mean that if a guy hadn't had an oyster license in 20 years, he'd still be able to go get a user fee?
No, I mean if a guy that oystered this season goes this July or August to buy his user fee, that he can still buy it.
If you had a user fee in the past.
Yeah, if they worked through the end of 15, but they hadn't bought theirs for 16 yet, they could still buy it.
991.
First time user fee.
Okay.
Yeah, Ben.
If we shut this door, Mr. O'Reilly, what we're going to have to do to open it, if we so decide down the road?
Come back and vote on it.
Any type of limited entry is difficult to work with once you have it in place.
That's my concern.
It's absolutely the way it is, but you know, you're in a situation where 991 or whatever it is out of 2,900, you probably are not impacting that many, but you know, that remains to be seen. I think the idea is on limited entry for crab, for example. Turned out limited entry for crab just turned into a situation where 400 and some out of 1,200 crab pot, hard pot licensees don't even go crab pot. Time back in 1999 when licenses were frozen, it seemed like a very good thing to do. So time will tell is all I can tell you. Usually the limited entry has been more successful with the bigger fisheries like the offshore summer fishery, black sea bass fishery, striped bass fishery, although a lot of people get upset still today about not having the striped bass tag. So
that's the only thing. You already got licensed.
But Ben, if you're asking whether
I don't think you will have too many,
they could be taken off at one commission meeting. If you're just talking about this, as far as the regulation goes,
both Mr. O'Reilly answered what I was.
You may remember what will happen. We'll put out a public notice, and that will give the opportunity for anyone who wants to come to the commission in March to do so and express their comments. And I think last year I said that, you know, there could be situations where the commission has a little more flexibility to adjust this type of limited entry, but that was even the 661 or it was. Now there's a lot more. They can always adjust. It just, you know, my experience tells me it's difficult. You know, we've tightened up on some things here. You probably know that, just to put in a plug for those who are really unhappy about all the exceptions for the commercial registration fee that then we found are going into the oyster fishery. That was stopped last year. So now everyone has to wait 2 years. I don't know how you feel about that, but a lot of you were upset, or not upset, but a lot of you complained that, you know, these guys or gals get the cards and they go right into the oyster. So everything's tied together, and you know, we just have to see how it works out if this gets passed by the commission.
Rich,
excuse me, but this user fees, be able to transfer these if somebody decides to get out of it in oystering, or somebody passes away, do we lose that person?
There's no transferability.
No transferability at all?
At this point.
Could we sunset it or have an annual review?
It's only in regulation. We can modify it.
But you can't transfer.
The way this is being presented, if the $300 user fee wasn't paid 1 year, would that exempt them from being able to get it again the following year? So
it's first time.
People new to the fishery, period. Right new, new to the fishery.
Okay.
Never been in before.
First time user fee purchaser. This doesn't make sense. First time user fee holder, not be able to do it.
So if somebody has hard times and they 2 years they don't pay that, then they can still get.
Tommy.
I'd like to offer a substitute motion that this be effective through the 1st of October and reviewed at our, or whenever we have our, would we have our August meeting to determine? I would like to make this effective through our August meeting to be reviewed when we discuss our total effort reduction.
That's a substitute motion. The second, okay with that?
Yeah.
So it's got a sunset of August 31st?
My intention there is at least after the discussion tonight that this all revs up, that they're limited entry. At least we'll keep another 200 from getting in before we decide what direction we're going to take.
Would you want that date to be so that that doesn't sunset out before something else is done?
I mean, if our meeting's in August, I don't think it would sunset out before. I think at that point we'd make a decision and we could you may decide at that point you want this to be permanent, or you might get the numbers and decide that the fishery will take another 100 licenses. But
you're going to have a final regulation by that time if the commission passes the emergency and passes the final version of the emergency, that final regulation. You can make it known to the commission that you want to review this in August with the possibility of ending it, which they would do by emergency regulation again, or keeping it. But it would stay on the books until the committee says we want to end it. And then we go back to the commission and ask them to end it.
Yeah.
In other words, the regulation itself would be awkward to say have it go from time A to time B.
Okay, so we have amended motion and a second. Everybody understand the motion?
Can you explain it, Rob, one more time, one last time, so that we're all clear?
Well, first-time users, we would have more time on first-time users, and basically we explained to the commission that we were reviewing it. It's during our deliberation period on effort control, is what it is. So when we come up with an effort control for, hopefully, usually we have that done at the August meeting, then this would not be a part of that plan if we did want to keep it. But we don't really have to put a sunset on it because we will have a new regulation at that time to be presented to the commission. But the intent is that it's a breathing period.
Everybody got it? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Or no. Okay. Motion passes. Any other discussion, motions?
Move for adjournment.
So moved. Time's 5:56. Thanks.
Sweet. I'm going to go to the next one.